Good evening. Welcome to the storytelling concert for week three, Augusta 1994. My name is Bill Payne. I'm Augusta's events coordinator for the summer programs. I want to welcome all of you for coming. A couple of brief announcements. We do not allow any flash photography or tape recording of this event. Tonight's guest has recordings for sale, and they're in the Augusta store, and I think maybe has some here with him this evening. So please make yourselves available of him in that regards, as well as tonight. Want you to know there's a concert here featuring Irish Week staff tomorrow night, and Thursday night, more Augusta staff and another concert. Friday night, we have a public dance that's going to feature contra dancing and Kaylee dancing, and everybody's welcome at that also. And Wednesday, picking in the park, in the Elkin City Park, there's going to be a children's dance from 7 to 8. So that's for children of all ages. It's going to be Irish dancing this week. So make note of those things. But tonight, I want you to sit back and relax, because the man up here is going to be doing all the work. Eddie Lanahan's come over from Ireland. He tells traditional Irish tales in a very, very dynamic manner. I know you're going to enjoy it very much. He's here as part of the Irish Week folklore class, along with Mick Maloney. And we should also have a couple of very special guests to join Eddie here later on this evening. So relax. Please make welcome Eddie Lanahan.
Thank you. Thanks be to God, I can't see you too well. Now, I'm just looking out there in the darkness, and it struck me that if you had a hall like this, which is completely dark, and knowing some of the stories that I know, some of the horrible ones, I think I'd be afraid myself, because I am afraid of the darkness in places. And within a radius of 5 miles of where I live, there are dozens of such places where I would not willingly walk at night. But I don't want to start with the night. Let me start with the daylight, and that's to give myself courage. In Crusheen, in County Clare, where I'm living now, there was a blacksmith one time, and he did good business. He was a good smith, and those were the times when horses and horses, horses were all the go. No cars, no tractors. And he had a son, and the son's name was Jerry. The father's name was Patrick. And Jerry was about 13 years of age, and like most sons, all he wanted to be was like his father at that age anyway. It's only a couple of years later until they start looking down on the same father, throwing aspersions on him. But he wanted to be a blacksmith, and he pestered Paddy and pestered him and pestered him. "Please, Daddy, please, 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 can I stay at home from school?" And of course, the father, I'd say he saw that the future for blacksmithing wasn't so good. And, "No, no, 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 you're going to go to school. You'll have a chance that I never had." And it went on from week to week, month to month, until at last the father could stick it no more, and he said, "All right, all right, you can stay at home from school, but on one condition. If you want to be a blacksmith, you're going to serve your time like any other apprentice would. Do you realize it takes 7 years to become a blacksmith?" Huh? The son didn't care a damn. Jerry, as long as he was out of the school and books and writing, he cared nothing. "All right," the father said, "you'll start on Monday." And Monday morning he started. And the father, before the customers came into the forge, he said to Jerry, "Listen to me now, and listen careful. I'll only tell you once, and tis this. The most important thing inside in a forge is the fire. If the fire isn't kept lighting, there's going to be no work done. So I'll show you how to light it. I'll show you how to keep it lighting. And after that, if you can't do it, back to school you'll go. So I'll tell you, Jerry, if he never paid attention before that, he paid attention as his father put down the fire, built up the fire, lit the fire, and then he showed Jerry how to turn the bellows wheel and keep the fire at a nice, steady temperature for reddening the iron to make the shoes for the horses and all the rest of it. So, that was fine. Jerry made the fire. The fire was lit nicely. Everything was going fine, and the crowd of farmers started gathering in, because 'twas the time of year when work had to be done. Fields to be harrowed, fields to be ploughed, all the rest of it, and in no time at all, by 10 o'clock, there was about 17 or 18 customers inside in the forge. Now, the same forge is still there, but they only keep sheep in it now because poor man is dead, and I'll tell you in due course why Jerry didn't keep up the trade. But 17 men inside in that dark little place, it was a fair squeeze, and in order to give the smith time and space to do his work, I tell you, they were fairly squoze up to each other, but they didn't care. That was part of it, because the stories that would be travelling around inside in that darkness, as men were smoking their pipes, and the smell of the fire, and the burning horseshoes, and all our horse, what you call them, hooves, and the rest of it, it was lovely. So, it went on, and they were there, as usual, talking, and there was Jerry, and he turning the wheel of the bellows, turning it, turning it, turning it, when all of a sudden, somewhere in the distance outside, they heard the sound of a horse coming at speed. And they knew damn well that was a saddle horse, because there was no wheels to be heard. The man was in a hurry. Now, since there were so many men around the door, none of them could get out to see who's coming, except one man that was sitting there, and he leaned back like that. They held his legs while he leaned. And all of a sudden he was rigid. Jeez, they said, Meek, what is it at all? Oh, gracious, he said, if you only saw what's coming. And the noise got louder, 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 until screeched to a halt outside the door. And, of course, there was a stampede of men out to sea. They nearly took the jams of the door with them. And there they saw, not what they expected, but a miserable-looking bag of bones of an old horse. Must be 40 years old at least. And up on his back, a big, tall man, about 6'3", dressed like a lord and built accordingly. And there was the horse now, outside the door, and like that, the legs spread out on the road, and your man up on his back, come on, bless you, come on. And when he was getting nowhere, of course, he swung off of the horse like this, and the people inside, they all had horses of their own. They were saying, yes, what kind of an animal is he? The man, I mean. Wouldn't you think he'd have a bit of respect? Just the horse should be up on his back. Look at the cut of the poor animal. But the man took no notice, only strode in, and he says, where's the blacksmith? And Paddy came forward, wiping his hands and his apron on him, and he says, I'm the smith. Why? Everyone your hammer, says the big man. Hammer? This is a forge. Yes, how could I do without a hammer, huh? There's the hammers there. And he showed the big man where he kept the hammers. He was a very neat man, Paddy. And there were the hammers on a big rack on the wall. And 'twasn't one hammer he had at all, but about 15 of them. From the biggest hammer on the left-hand side, down, 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 to the smallest little hammer on the right-hand side, about 3 inches long. He was a kind of a dentist in his spare time also. Handy for knocking out the teeth. And the big man, no niceties like that. Only over he went, looked at the big hammer, to take 2 ordinary men to lift it. Mighty sledgehammer. Put up one hand, lifted it out like that. Balanced it in his hand. Yes, he said, that's a fine weapon. Huh? Will you give me a loan of that for a small while? All right, says Paddy, I will. But be careful of it. That was my grandfather's hammer. Bring it back safe. Don't have any fear about that, says the man. Out he went, and of course the crowd now were after him to see what would he do. And he went out to where the horse was, and he looked down at the horse and he said, horse, get up. And the poor old misfortune of a horse now only cocked one eyelid and plop. Horse, he says, get up. And the horse, exhausted, put down the head like that on the ground, and no other sound or movement. For the last time, horse, get up. And with that, the horse rolled over on his back and cocked up the 4 legs up to the heavens. And with that, your man, he lifted the hammer and bang, down between the horse's eyes. A hard thing to do when you consider that the horse's legs were up in the air. It took fair doing, but he split the horse's head there and then, scattered the horse's brains, and the 2 eyes popped out.
boat went in different directions, but he wasn't happy with that. While the men looked on, shocked, disgusted, he starts to take that and that and that and that. Guts, blood, bones. The outside of the forge was painted, and the ditch on the other side of the road. The horse was splattered for 7 or 8 yards around, and everyone like that, looking, disgusted, but frightened too. And the man, the big man, all he did was to step back, leaned on the hammer, and looked at the mess. And if he did, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds passed, and all of a sudden, the mess there on the ground began to quiver and shake, and suddenly gather itself together, and up out of that mess sprang the finest black stallion that was ever seen in that part of County Clare. And all the people looking at it, merciful God Almighty, it is a pure miracle entirely. But the man, all he did was to take the hammer, and the blood still on it, mind. He took it in, and he says to Paddy, "Guard that hammer with your life. 'Tis a mighty weapon, surely." With that, turned around, up on the horse's back, hop horse, and off out over the hill towards Ballinruan. They saw him no more, and they crept back into the forge. And do you think that there was any shortage of talk in that place that day? I'll tell you, the day flew like that, until there was nobody left at all inside in the forge except Paddy and Jerry. And Paddy, he says to Jerry at last, around 6 o'clock, he says, "Do you know something? What about old Betsy there now below in the field? Jesus, she's no good. She must be 40 years old at least. She was a great horse in her day. They bought her at the fair of Spencel Hill years and years before. She had served faithfully. Oh, many of the cock of hay she had brought in, many of the fields she had ploughed." And immediately, of course, Jerry wasn't stupid. He knew what his father was going to say. "No, no, no, Dada, please." "Shut up, boy. Obeying orders is part of being a smith. Shut up," he says. "Go down there to the field and bring her up. I have something here for her." And Jerry had to go down. Oh, oh, go down and take the poor old hoss who put out her face to give him a kiss almost. She was a pure old pet. And he had to bring her up to the forge, patting her all the way until there they saw the father. And he hands behind the back and he says, "Aha, Betsy, is it yourself? Come here, girl." And she put out her head, thinking she was going to get some bit of sugar or something else, when, like that, rose the hammer and bang, down between her eyes and split her head. And he wasn't satisfied with that. Every single thing he saw the big man doing, he did it. Take that and that and that, scattered her around the road and stood back. And pothering all the time, or what you call Jerry, excuse me, looking at this, you get frightened, you forget your own name, name of God, when you see a thing like that happening. He looked, and they waited 5, 10, 15 seconds, a half a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, nothing happened. And one or two people passed the road and looked at them and kept going even faster. And when nothing was happening, the father, he says to Jerry, look, your mother, she'll be worried about this. Name of God, gather her up there, the horse, off of the road, and put her into this little canvas bag." And poor old Jerry had to gather the horse, scrape her up off of the road, into the canvas bag. Lord bless us, you'd fit her into a pint glass. And tie the top of the bag off down to the lake, and blop, 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 gone. I tell you, when he came back for his supper that night, he was the quiet boy. And the following day, naturally enough, the mother, she says, "Where's Betsy?" "Nah, she's gone," says the father. "Your horses like that do wander off. She'll be back in due course. Don't worry at all about her." But he didn't come back. And of course, the work in the forge had to go on. It was a busy time of the year. The following day was busy, and the second day, and the third day was even busier. And they were still talking about the great thing that had happened, when all of a sudden, inside, they heard outside, and they said, "Oh, jeez, could it be the same one again?" And your man leaned out, and he said, he's back, out again, took the door with him almost, and there he was outside. But even though he was up on the fine black horse, there, as he swung down, he noticed, and they noticed, that up behind him was another person, and an old person at that. old and bent and withered, long grey hair, and the nose and the chin nearly meeting. And your man said nothing, only walked in. "Where's the blacksmith?" says he. "I'm here," says Paddy. "What do you want this time? Have with that hammer." "There it is. Why?" "I want a loan of it. Don't worry, I'll bring it back." Over, took the hammer with one hand, weighed it. "God," he says, "that is a mighty weapon. I'll be back in a short time." Out he went, and of course the crowd after him, wondering what would it be this time. And your man straightened himself, looked up, and he says, "Mother, come down off of the horse. I want to talk to you." And the old lady, she looked down and she muttering something you wouldn't know, is it Irish, English or Latin, or whether she was saying her prayers or even giving out. And he says, "Mother, come down off of the horse. I want to talk to you on the level." "Mother, come down off of the horse. I won't tell you again." With that, he reached up, caught her by the neck, clapped her on the ground, and said no more, only rose the hammer and bang, down between her eyes, and scattered what couple of brains she had around the road, and wasn't happy to leave it at that. With the true feeling that a son often has for a mother, you could see there was enthusiasm in it. Large, he started welting and welting and welting, and he scattered her and splattered her, and all the people like that. Jesus, the mother, what kind of a man is he at all? But he stood back, put his hand on the hammer, and waited 5 seconds, and 10 seconds, and 15 seconds, and there they saw the slight little ripple of movement in all that mess, and it began to gather itself and gather itself, and suddenly up out of the mess sprang the finest looking young woman that any of them ever saw in the parish of Crusheen. And they were there, their mouths as big as saucers, they're looking, "Holy God Almighty, who could do it? Is it a miracle?" And they blessed themselves again. Your man, he turned around and he said, "Hiya, Paddy. That's a mighty hammer. Don't let no one tell you otherwise. Guard it with your life. Good man, thank you very much." Cut the girl gently, put her up on the horse, got up behind, and hop like that, and off they went, out over the hill, towards Ballinruan and the County Galway. They were seen no more. What kind of conversation do you think was inside in that forge for the rest of the day? Mutters and whispers and scratchings of heads. And as this man got his job done, and that man got his job done, and went away, you could see that there was going to be a right session of storytelling in Fogarty's pub and in Clark's pub that night. Many pints would be drunk. Indeed, many men would get drunk. And at last, the final one, he left around 6 o'clock. But Paddy, he forgot to stop. You could see now that something was playing in his mind. And he was still there at 6:30, finishing up the last few things he had to do, when, all of a sudden, from across the yard, the living house was just across the yard, he had the screech, "And now, Christ Almighty, will you come in? And I have the dinner here ready for you. The bloody men of Ireland, just that they expect the women of Ireland to be pure slaves. Come in now, or I'll throw it out to the dog." The wife and Paddy, he looked at Jerry, and he says, "Isn't it an awful thing? Isn't that why the land of Ireland has got nowhere, the bloody women of Ireland? You'll be trying to do a bit of work, and that's all the thanks you get for it, huh? They think they're something special, huh?" And he says, "Hold on a minute," he says, "one second." And he put his eye on the hammer. "May God, you know something," he says. "When your mother, and you might not know it, when your mother and me got married, she was the finest looking young woman in the parish, or in the three parishes. And look at the cut of her now, huh? And only 2 teeth left and the grey hair of her. Yeah, she's a right looking specimen." "Well," she said, "maybe we could improve that." And Jerry, he looked at his father. "No, no, Dad, don't. She's fine. I like my mother the way she is." "Shut up, boy. Didn't I tell you? You have to obey orders if you want to be a blacksmith. Shut up." And with that, he reached up and it took him the 2 hands to lift the hammer. But lift it he did, and off out of the forge, and across the yard, and into the house, And there she was, stirring the old pot of stew inside, muttering and cursing away to herself. Mean, he's done enough, let's go. Damn and blessed it is. And more like that. And Paddy crept in, up behind her. And he said, "Yoo-hoo, we're here." And she turned around with the ladle in her hand, ready to give him dog's abuse. And she never got a chance to do it, because as soon as she turned, he met her bang like that between the eyes with the hammer and flattened her on the floor. And then did exactly what he saw the big man doing outside, and take that and that and that. And by God, you could see he was enjoying himself. Well, of course, Jerry, as soon as he saw that, he nearly collapsed. His mother, murdered, killed by his own father. But the father stood back, leaned on the hammer, and waited. 5, 10, 15 seconds. Nothing happened. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. And Jerry looked over at him. Now he says, "Nothing's going to happen, and we'll be tried for murder. That's what we'll be. We'll be hanged." "Shut up, boy. Shut up. Now, take that bag there. Scrape her up. Put her into it, and take her down and put her where you put the horse." And Jerry had to do that. Imagine scraping his own mother off of the floor, scraping her down off of the walls, and into the little bag. It would fit her like that. Tie the top of it, down to the lake. Bloop, 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 gone. I tell you, he was the quiet boy as he ate his stew that night. He had no mind for stew. And the father, he didn't seem to take any notice, smoked his pipe and went to bed, and told Jerry, "Be up early in the morning and redden that fire." And there was Jerry now, thinking, and thinking hard, and wondering, "Geez, I'll be next. That's what'll happen." And he made up his mind there and then to pack his bag and to escape while the going was good, which is exactly what he did. Out in the middle of the night, gone out the window, and legged it. He ran for as far as his legs would take him. Hour after hour, he was fairly fit, hour after hour, and come almost dawn, just maybe an hour in the dim light before dawn, he could go no farther. And he collapsed at a crossroads. Now, crossroads in Ireland in those days, they were complicated places if you didn't know where you were going, because there was no such thing as signposts. There isn't too many of them today in Ireland, but that's to mystify tourists and to give them a sense of, you know, finding out for themselves. But in the old days, it was different. You had to know where you were going, and there he was now. And, ah, Jesus, I can travel no further. What he did was to sit down for a rest for a few minutes under a white thorn bush there at the crossroads in the tall grass. Butcher, he was hardly there a couple of minutes when he fell back and sound asleep. No, what woke him? I don't know, but it was broad daylight. And, oh Lord, he thought of his father, looked back, and off he went again. But he was only gone 2 or 3 feet when he heard the noise behind him. And he looked, and there he saw the 10 toes sticking up out of the grass. He looked closer and saw that 'twas a beggar man who had fallen asleep on the other side of the white thorn bush. Uh-oh, I don't want no company. Tiptoed away, but he was hardly gone 2, 3 feet when a hand reached out. "Ha ha! I have you trying to rob me, were you, you dirty looking caffler? No, 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 I'm trying to get away from my father." And in brief, he explained that the father hadn't been treating him so good, and he was after running away from home. And the tramp looked at him. "Where are you going, young lad?" he says. "I don't know, anywhere except that way." "Well, I'll give you a small bit of advice," says the tramp. Go that road, but don't go that road ahead." And Jerry now was a curious young lad, like most of that age. "Why?" he says. "I can tell you why. Over that hill, you'll find on the other side there's a valley. And if you look down there, there's a castle. And in that castle there's a rich man living, some old lord. He calls himself a king, but you couldn't always believe those fellas. And there's something wrong with him. He has some class of a disease. And he has put out to the whole countryside that if there's any doctor that can cure him of that disease, he'll give half his lands and his daughter's hand in marriage, if you wanted to get married. But didn't everybody that wants that? Anyway, I'm only warning you, go that way, go this way, but avoid that road if you could. Why, said Jerry? I'll tell you why. Because any of those doctors that took that road never came back. That'll tell you that the disease he has is nothing ordinary. Good luck. Take my advice, bye. Bye-bye. And off he went. And Jerry was left there at the crossroads, up and down and looking, and all the time wondering, was the father going to be turning around the bend of the road? So he got, his curiosity got the better of him, and he says, I'll just go to the top of the hill, have a look, and I'll go no further, which he did. But when he got to the top of the hill and looked down, the haze of the morning was on the valley, or more a plain rather than a valley. And he said, yes, I'll have to go a small bit closer. I can't see any cattle. And he went down halfway, and, by God, sure enough, there he saw the outline of the cattle, but still covered in mist or fog. So he had to go a bit closer just to see for himself, was the beggar man telling the truth or not. And he did, and three quarters of the way down. And, by God, sure enough, there was the cattle. And he could see the battlements of it, and he could see above on the battlements something thing all right, but not clearly. So he went a bit closer again, until he was only about 300 yards from the castle wall. And there, above, on the battlements, he saw spikes sticking up. And above on the spikes, on the left-hand side all along, were heads. There's where the doctors had ended their professions. And on the far-off head, and there wasn't much left of it, only the skull. And the next one, there was a little cook of hair above on top of it. And this one, there was one eye and a lot of the skin. And this one, the two eyes were there, but the birds were making sure that the eyes wouldn't be there for long. They were busy on it. And on the one above the gate, he could still see the blood running down along the metal spike. And on the other side, one, two, three, four, five more spikes and no heads. So he concluded to himself that they must be expecting more company, and he had enough seen, bye-bye. He turned around, but he was hardly gone 10 yards, when the gates opened, a trumpet sounded, and out dashed six men on horseback, and he saw them coming and ran. But sure, of course, a man on foot, what chance has he against a horse? He was surrounded in a matter of minutes, and the chief man, the captain of the guards, I suppose you'd call him, looked down and he says, ha-ha, who are you? Spying on us, is it? Well, my boy, you're for it. He drew his sword and, Jerry, he says, no, I'm a doctor. I'm here to cure his majesty or his lordship or whoever he is inside. And I looked down at him. By God, they says, doctors is getting very small in Ireland these times and young, but if you're a doctor, come in. There's a welcome inside for you. And he looked up at one of the spikes on the battlements. In they went, under the archway of the gate. And sure enough, there above, Padraig, or your man, Jerry, he could see clearly enough now the spikes and the heads. And he thought to himself, will I ever come out of this place? They were only halfway across the courtyard when he began to get a bad smell. And he looked at the guards and he says, what's that? What do you mean, what's that? The smell. That's not a smell at all. Wait till you find the real thing. How do you mean? You'll find out. You see that door there? Walk in there. Walk down the corridor. Keep going until you see a door in front of you. That's where you'll find our master. And good luck to you. Laughed. And he walked towards the door. And every step Jerry was taking, the smell was getting worse and worse and worse. Until at last he could hardly breathe. If that smell had a colour, it'd be green and ugly. And when he came to the door, opened it, he could almost lean against the smell that was coming out against him. It was vile, like rotting bodies and all your worst dreams together. And he could hardly see as he tried to look down along that corridor. But when he looked back, there was the captain of the guards and the others pointing their weapons at him. Go on. He hadn't much of a choice. He walked down the corridor, step for step. his fingers on his nose and his eyes closed, and at last he came to the door. And on that side of the door and on this side of the door there was a little alcove and a man standing to attention in each of them, a spear in his hand and a clothes peg on his nose. And Jerry looked at him. He said, "Where's the boss?" "That's where." And he turned the handle of the door, walked in, and if the smell outside was bad, the smell inside, well, there is no words in the English language that could describe it. And he looked out of one eye, and there, staring at him from the other side of the room, was another eye. And beside the eye, he saw only a sheet, and a kind of a chair, it must be, and somebody sitting under the sheet, on top of the chair. It could be a throne, I don't know what you'd call it, but I tell you, Jerry wasn't exactly worried at that stage about such niceties. All he saw was the eye and the voice. And the voice said, "Ha, who's this?"
"I'm a doctor, and I'm here to cure you, Your Majesty."
"A doctor?" And the other half of the sheet went up, and there Jerry saw a man sitting all right, but like no ordinary man. Oh, he had a beard, all right, and he had the shape of a man, but worse again. Above and top of his head was a scab, and 'twas no ordinary scab, because it was for all the world like one of those big sun hats, or like a Mexican hat, a sombrero. It was a scab on top of a scab, on top of a scab, on top of a scab, a little skyscraper of scabs, and out from his head about 3 feet on each side and behind and in front. It was green and scabby, and drip, drip, drip out of that scab was pus flowing down along his nose, dripping off of his earlobes, flowing into his eyes and dripping off of his chin, and the smell would only knock you. Oh, Jerry, he looked at it, and he went down on his knees like that, in order to cover his nose and bow down to the ground, and he says, "I have the cure, Your Majesty." "Did I hear you say you had a cure?" "Up and cure me. Have your servants in this place?" "Servants?" And immediately two doors opened, and in came a crowd of servants, and one big fat man leading them. I suppose he was the master of ceremonies. "And Your Majesty," they said, "what is your wish?" "Listen to this doctor. He has a cure," he says. "He better have, or his head will be on the spike this evening." And Jerry says, "No, have you cows in this place, Your Majesty?" "Cows? Did you ever see a palace without cows? Of course I have cows. Hundreds and hundreds." "No, I don't need hundreds at all. All I need is a small quantity. And a small quantity, it isn't milk I need. But I need 4 servants to get what I want." "4 servants, no trouble at all," said the big man. "4 servants. And I'll also need 4 buckets and 4 shovels. They all looked at him as if he was some kind of an imbecile. But the man on the throne, he says, "Give him what he wants and give it to him now." Out he went, along the corridor, out through the courtyard. They let him out over the drawbridge and down to one of the meadows, where there were surely 400 fine black Kerry cattle inside in a meadow. And he says, you, "Now listen carefully to me. What I want you to do is, I want you to take these buckets, and I want you to take these little shovels, and I want you to go into that field and go around to those cows, follow them, and get, you know what cows do, get it as it falls. Now, if it touches the ground, it is no good. I don't want it off of the ground. I want it nice and steamy and green as it falls from source." And of course, they were laughing at him. Sure. He's gone around the twist, of course, but he says, "Do it." I got it. I'll tell you this much. They found out soon enough that it isn't so easy to catch that stuff on the hoof. Because as soon as the cows saw them coming, off they went with their tails in the air, mad. They travelled, those 4 lads, surely 50 miles around that field, over and back, with their shovels out in front of them. Ain't that? Huh? And 'twas evening time before at last they had the buckets full of nice, steamy, green stuff. And they came back. And Jerry says, come on, he says, bring it in, bring it in. The cure will have to be worked by me alone. And back they went, under the archway, in through the courtyard, in the doorway, down the corridor, into where your man was waiting, 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 and the scab still dripping, dripping down. And as soon as he saw the servants with the four buckets, he looked, and he looked at Jerry, and he says, I hope you know what you're doing. Leave the curing to me, said Jerry. He dismissed the servants, and the four buckets of stuff were there, the shovel stuck in each one of them. And now he says, Your Majesty, what you have to do is sit, say nothing, and don't move, no matter what I do, or the cure won't work. All right, your man buttoned his lip. He sat there, and Jerry, he walked around him, and he looked like any doctor would, you know, to try to look professional. And he looked there behind, and he says, you know, something, your Majesty, it is lucky I came, because the scab, it's starting to grow down your back, and in a short time you'd be in very serious difficulty, I have a feeling. But anyway, I'm here, and that part of it won't occur. Now he says, I'll start. He dipped the shovel into one of the buckets, and up on top of your man's head with the bucket of, or the shovel, and indeed the bucket of cow dung, and the second bucket, and the third bucket, and the fourth, and it gave him such pleasure, as it would you or me, to pour cow dung like that above on the head of royalty. Wouldn't you love to be doing it to the Queen of England or somebody like that? And they're not able to say a word. Well, I tell you, there was four servants still there to catch the four sides of the cloth, the corners, and to hold it. And at last, when the last of the cow dung was up above, balanced on top of his head, he cut the four corners, tied them on top, and there was your man with a turban above on his head. And of course, it started to settle and settle and settle gradually. And Jerry says to him, no, 3 days, 3 nights, no food, no drink, no talk. You'll have to sit there, and no matter what will happen, sit. Don't complain. Wait. So, your man sat, and the rest of them watched. And it was a comical sight to see the pus that was dripping down replaced by a different kind of greenery. Drip, 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 down over his fine robes, in front and behind and at the sides. And there was Jerry trying his best now not to smile, not to laugh, but to keep a straight face. And at the end of 3 days, he said, all right, 'tis time to do my duty. He walked in behind the throne, and now he says, behold the cure. He put down his two hands like that, under the cloth, just over your man's eyebrows, and he lifted up, and off came the whole mess. But the only problem was, even though the scab came, certainly did, and all of it, your man's hair, it also came. And his eyebrows, he was left as bald as Kojak, minus the eyebrows. But do you think he minded that? He called for a mirror when he found the weight gone off of his head. He says, hand it to me. He took a look. Oh, God, he says, I'm the handsome devil. Doctor, congratulations. You have a mighty job done entirely. And I'm going to keep my part of the bargain. I promised half my ground and my daughter's hand in marriage. Call her there. And the daughter was called. And when she came in with her handmaidens, dressed in her finery, Jerry, he looked at her. His mouth dropped open. He had never seen such a beautiful girl in all of his life. Well, he went down on his knees, and your man behind says, stand up, stand up. What kind of a fella are you? And he stood, and he looked at her. He bowed. Welcome, welcome, he says. And she looked at him. He looked more closely at her. Big God, didn't they fall in love? I'll try to shorten the story as best I can. They fell in love, and everything was arranged there and then. Almost, almost, except for one thing. Just as Jerry was getting into a nice stride of conversation with her, he felt the tap there, and the king says to him of the Lord, tell me one thing, he says. When the wedding takes place, now, will your father and mother come? Of course. Why wouldn't they? Well, except my mother can't. She met with a little bit of an accident a small while ago. But my father'll come. What kind of a man is he? Says the lad. Oh, he's a blacksmith. And there was silence in the room. A blacksmith? A blacksmith marry my daughter? A blacksmith's son marry my daughter? Can't be done. No chance in the wide world. Oh, I thought you were a doctor. Well, I'm a doctor too, but lots of blacksmiths are doctors. No, I'd be shamed. And we'll have to think about this. And he went away with the big fat man, the servant, and the chief of the servants. And they put their heads in a huddle, and at last they came out with a solution. All right, says the man. They tell me here that we can solve this. I'll have to promote you. I'll have to knight you. And get down there now in your knees. Bring me the sword of state. And Jerry went down on his knees. The sword was brought in, and a big heavy sword it was too. And the king caught a hold of it. God almighty, says the weight of that. To take 2 men to lift it, ordinary. But I'm so delighted to be cured. He lifted it, and he brought it down on Jerry's shoulder one side and muttered some words. And he brought it down on the other side and muttered some more words. I suppose the knighthood is a complicated business. And he was raising it to bring it down on top of Jerry's head. I suppose you have to touch him on the head too. When he stepped that bit too near to the edge of the step, and with the weight of the sword, didn't he lose his footing? And down, down it went, crack, down on Jerry's head. Jesus, and my head split in the name of God Almighty. He looked up. And there was his father looking down at him. And he says, with the tongs in his hand, you dirty looking Lodroman, did you fall asleep? Didn't I tell you had to keep the bloody fire level at a level temperature? What kind of a bloody fella are you at all? Back to school you're going next Sunday, next Monday, whatever day it is. One, out of here. And he gave me a toe on the backside, out the door. And Jerry landed in the middle of the road. And all the faces looking at him out of the forge. 14 or 15 farmers, smiling back to their ears. What kind of a fool would you make as a blacksmith? Would anyone give you a pair of horseshoes to make, a coulter to redden, anything else? Go back to school, boy. You have no business being a blacksmith. The following Monday, Jerry went back to school. And you know something? It might be as well off that he did. Because it had taught him enough about blacksmithing that he never again wanted to see the inside of the forge. He stuck to the books. He made out well afterwards. And I know he made out well because he joined the civil service. He joined the revenue commissioners afterwards. And that's the best job you could have. Taxing the people that are working and doing nothing yourself. It's a job that gives extreme satisfaction. The reason I know that is I worked at it for 2 years myself, and the reason I know that that story is true is because Jerry is still alive. He's an old man now, retired. He told it to me himself, and I know that any person who ever served in the revenue commissioners never told a lie. And you think I'd tell ye lies? Not at all. No chance. So, that's one of them. Now, I see people with musical instruments and a basketball, which I suppose is a musical instrument of a sort, coming also. So, if anybody has a mind to start some trouble up here for a few moments, I'd be delighted to see them. And then I'll continue with some more stories. Not as bloody this time, but I'll try to make it that if you have to go through a dark place tonight, back to your dorm, or if there are any dark spaces in that dorm, you won't want to do so without some company. And of course, that's all some people are looking for an excuse for anyway. Not to do it without some company. Well, I'll give you the excuse for that. Where are the musicians? Will she done show? No, will ain then you can talk to an oos on show, can call ulium. Will ain then shin? No musician. They're all gone drinking. It is the curse of Irish music. All right, I'll have to tell you a story about a poor man who lived one time in North Clare, in a place called Carn. Now Carn is only 4 miles from Ballyvaughan, but the one thing about Carn is it's lonesome, it's stony, and in the winter time you wouldn't put out a dog there. You'd wonder how any people live in that place. Well, nowadays they can because they're getting subsidies from the EC. But in days gone by, I tell you, to live in places like that, you'd want to be almost a superman to do it. But there were people who did it. And one of those was the family of the Divneys. Now, as I say, how they wrested a living out of those rocks and stones, no one knows. That'd be a story in itself. But they did, the old people, and moreover, they raised a family of four. Now, all the rest of the family, except the youngest son, they had to immigrate, naturally enough, America, England. There was no staying there because all they could rear there was goats, and you get sick of a diet of goat meat.